You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. So here are some fun facts for you. Spoiler alert, they're not actually very much fun. According to the United Nations, 80% of those displaced worldwide by climate change are women and children. There is limited gender-specific data on climate displacement in the United States. The Federal Emergency Management Agency, that's FEMA, does not break down data on those who seek out assistance in the wake of disasters by gender. But experts say that the same factors that make women vulnerable to climate change, namely poverty and caregiving responsibilities globally, are present in the United States. Nearly 13% of women live below the poverty line in the United States, compared to 10.6% of men. Nationally, 80% of single-parent households are headed by women. Quote, this is from a Ms. Magazine article on climate change and gender, Ms. Magazine. Quote, women are often impacted because they just have fewer resources due to systemic inequality and injustice, said Margot Granite, founding director of NGEN Collaborative, was a Washington-based consultancy. She pointed to Hurricane Katrina in 2005 as an event that showed the disproportionate impact of climate-related disasters on women, particularly women of color. Women were more likely to live in poverty and head up single-parent households before the storm. Afterward, they experienced a spike in gender-based violence. They were more likely to be unemployed and had the greatest difficulties in returning to their homes, end quote.
So the climate vulnerability of women here in the United States is extraordinary in the global South. But here in the United States, it is about to get kicked up a notch by the Supreme Court's impending overturning of Roe v. Wade. Now, in the midst of climate disaster displacement, loss of employment, houselessness, and limited access to health care, just to name a few things climate disasters bring, women will have to carry the additional burden of carrying to term unwanted pregnancies. And some of those pregnancies will be due to the kind of gender-based violence, specifically rape, that they will face in the midst of a disaster. Women who give birth in the time period following disasters have an increased risk of complications. But of course, even in the midst of disaster, many women will risk their lives to end those pregnancies. If the GOP has its way, women will go to jail if they attempt to end those pregnancies. Now, women who live on the front lines of toxic industries like fossil fuel refineries, they face exposure to poisons that sicken them and the unborn, whom, as a matter of law, women will soon be forced to carry to term, and regardless of how environmental toxins harm the fetus, and that's happening already in some places. Pregnant women suffer enormously from heat extremes, especially those who live in urban heat islands bereft of air conditioning and cooling facilities. You know, I can go on and on and on and on about the kinds of vulnerabilities women face and what it means to carry children to term in extraordinary circumstances. Now, the impending Supreme Court decision is itself an impending disaster for women on so many fronts, including the fronts of our climate crisis and climate justice crisis. It is yet another weapon the right is using to increase vulnerability as our climate catastrophe unfolds.
And what does it look like globally as our climate catastrophe unfolds? The city of Durban, South Africa, had as much rain in one day as it would normally have in 8 months. 8 months of rain in one day. Massive flooding. I originally wrote, you can imagine the flooding, but actually you probably can't imagine the flooding. I can't imagine the flooding.
Not at all.
The death count as of May 7th was 435 people. They're having mass funerals because they can't manage it one body at a time. And that's with a lot of bodies gone, swept away, so they can't be buried. Many of the dead died from mudslides, trapping them underneath buildings, so they suffocated. It's a bad way to go. 13,000 homes damaged. An official quoted in the BBC said it was, quote, one of the worst weather storms in the history of our country, unquote. The president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, said this flooding, quote, is part of climate change, unquote. And he's right. There is peer-reviewed science saying that the warming atmosphere is causing increased rainfall in southern Africa, in this very region. So climatologists had studied this exact place. And that's in addition to a large body of peer-reviewed science saying that global warming in general causes more volatile weather, including wildly disproportionate rainfalls. So this fits exactly with what scientists were predicting. Climate change is, well, changing the climate. So massively unusual weather patterns emerge. To say that this isn't part of climate change is a type of denialism. Drainage is poor in the area. So days later, there were entire parts of the province that were still submerged. The water just doesn't have anywhere to go. The rain, though, is, of course, the primary cause of this flooding. People shouldn't get confused. Some folks are getting caught up on the issue of drainage. And we don't mean to deny that the drainage should be improved, but that's not the fundamental problem here. It's a weather problem. Sure, the flood would drain faster if the drainage were better. But what's causing the flooding in the first place is the water falling from the sky. 8 months of it in a single day. Our first thoughts should be with those who died, and then with those who have lost their homes. But in addition, there is much wider regional disruption as well, and that's going to be the case as long as climate change gets worse. The highway that connects Durban to Gauteng province is blocked. Durban has an important port, and shipping has been suspended. This is going to affect supplies throughout southern Africa. Orders won't arrive on time. Maybe important supplies like food and medicine won't get delivered. Maybe a business will lose its opportunities with all the economic disruption that this is going to cause. We don't know at this moment just how bad and how long the ramifications will be, but it's going to inconvenience and disrupt lives for a whole lot of people. Over 900 cell phone towers are down as a result of this storm. So people can't communicate or connect or look up information. In some cases, they can't call for help or find one another. About 300 schools were damaged. So obviously this is going to disrupt education. Health facilities were damaged and can't function normally. All of this can happen with one major flood in one city. The effects are not just local. And we'll close this segment on Durban with a direct quote from a BBC article. Quote, one aid organization, Gift of the Givers, is now appealing for people who know how to operate excavation machinery. This is now more likely to be a body retrieval operation as opposed to a rescue. But still, residents are digging through the rubble with their bare hands. There is a frantic search for clean drinking water. Unquote.
Of course, it's not just South Africa. Tropical Storm Meggy hit the Philippines in April 2022. It's killed 167 with 110 more missing. We hope they are found, but surely some number of the missing will be dead. So it could easily be a death toll well over 200. In one town called Pilar, 80% of the housing is a complete loss. The homes washed away and there's nothing left of them, according to the Philippine National Disaster Agency. With housing and displacement, the total number of people affected by the storm is just shy of 2 million people. Mm. Now, is this climate change? Yep, sure is. Yeah, absolutely. Widespread view among scientists is that Filipino tropical storms, specifically Filipino tropical storms, are being made worse by climate change. Philippines is one of the most vulnerable countries to climate disasters. It's right in the path of typhoons and tropical storms like this one that will get only stronger as climate change gets worse. Now, people do carry on trying, to dispute this. Climatologists do studies even after the storms happen with very narrowly framed questions. Remember those ones that hit other parts of Southern Africa earlier this year? We reported it on this show, and here's the brief recap. Tropical storm Anna hit southeastern Africa, especially Malawi, Mozambique, and Madagascar. The torrent of rainwater from the tropical storm was so dire that roads and bridges were washed away. 72,000 homeless people in Madagascar. 120,000 Mozambicans were affected. Quotes, in the coverage of people who worked their entire lives to build modest homes only to lose them in a day. People losing fishing boats that are their only means of livelihood. In Malawi, the president declared a state of emergency, and some of the roads in Malawi were cut off, which means they can't drive the dead to their burials. So families are carrying them, carrying in their arms the dead bodies of their family members to the burials. UNICEF called the storm a blunt reminder of the climate crisis and what it does. The World Weather Attribution Group looked at those very storms in Madagascar and Mozambique and Malawi and found that global warming made them more damaging than they would have been without global warming. We didn't really need this study. We didn't need it at all. All our models say that warmer weather makes for stronger storms. This is Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane, and you are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. This week, we are talking about a range of topics, massive flooding in South Africa, massive flooding in the Philippines, and other issues. But anyway, we have the study now. Southern African natural disasters were made worse by global warming.
Closer to home for American listeners of this show, as we are recording this on May 8th, 2022, instead of water, it's raining ash in New Mexico from the huge fires there. As it rains too much in one place, it doesn't rain enough in another place. The floods and the fires are connected in a global weather pattern sort of a way. Conditions in New Mexico and really throughout most of the American West are so dry from so much long-term drought that it's all flammable. Fires that could have been controlled or spread slowly with a reasonable level of moisture in the plants and in the soil and in the trees are uncontrolled. And now they spread fast and wide in drought conditions. So we get this huge fire in New Mexico, for example. The U.S. Forest Service thinks it may have started this. They say they were trying to reduce flammable materials with a controlled burn, but they underestimated the dryness. So their attempted controlled burn became an uncontrolled burn, and it's ripped through New Mexico, being not the U.S. Forest Service's attempt, but the extreme dryness from long-term drought conditions, which is a climate transformation situation. So far, 267 square miles have been blackened by this fire. That's 691 square kilometers. Let's round that up to 700 square kilometers since it's still spreading. It is the second largest fire in the history of New Mexico, and it's still going. Thousands of people have been evacuated. You might be wondering, is this a trend or is this just one fire? Not too many people who live in the American West have any doubts about the trend. But a New Yorker who doesn't get around too much and reads about these things in the paper might wonder this question. Well, it is a trend. A scientific organization called Climate Central tracks these things. They looked at how common were large fires in the 1970s and how common they are today. The answer, 7 times more common. Large forest fires in the American West are 7 times more common today than they were in the 1970s.
Metropolis in Brazil has seen flash flooding. That's a bit north of Rio de Janeiro. They got a month's worth of rain in 3 hours. 3 hours. The regional governor said it was the heaviest rainfall since 1932. And of course, it's climate change related. Much of the housing is on a hill with a risk of mudslides. Interviews with the local people say they knew there was a risk, but they can't afford to live anywhere else. The housing in more desirable spots is beyond their price tag. So this is a case of climate change hitting the poor harder. 171 killed, 120 more missing. That was the first. Rainfall. Well, then came a second one. They cut off the rescue mission and the streets became rivers of mud. Anyway, you know who is being clear, or at least relatively clear, is the IPCC. Now, after years of not being clear, and now that it's maybe too late, they're coming around. The latest report, like the last one, we can only read what they're saying, but notice a big message. Humanity can't handle it if we pass 1.5 degrees Celsius. We can't cope with that. No level of effort is going to be able to prevent catastrophe with mass death and destruction if global temperatures warm by 1.5 degrees Celsius. And reminder of what this IPCC report is. Consensus statement from the leading scientists from all around the world. They come from 65 countries. It's a United Nations project, and 195 governments have to sign off on the report before it's released. They all did. We need to talk more about this report, but we haven't had a chance to mention it yet, so here it is.
Here it is. More to come. On an earlier show, we reported on El Salvador building a Bitcoin city. And we said it was an awfully big gamble because Bitcoin was highly volatile and based on nothing in the real world. Now, since I wrote that segment, Bitcoin has lost half of its value. The International Monetary Fund has called on El Salvador to rescind its use of Bitcoin as legal currency. They're saying it poses a major structural risk to the country's economy and would make it difficult for El Salvador to get international loans. And El Salvador depends on international loans, so this is an awfully big deal for them. Now, because Bitcoin is so volatile, its value might go back up by the time you hear this, or it might be down more. But either way, the point is it's not stable. It's not stable. And that makes it unsuitable as a national currency, says the IMF. And while we have our ideological issues with the IMF, I see their point on this one. As a reminder, the reason this is climate relevant is because Bitcoin takes a great deal of energy to make. It's a big consumer of energy. That means its net effect is large increases in carbon emissions. If we shut down all Bitcoin tomorrow, we'd save carbon emissions considerably.
We have some good news segments, and we're always needing those. Now, this first good news segment is another bit on Bitcoin. Ha, ha, ha. That's kind of corny, I know.
I need more puns on Extinction Rebellion Radio. Really. Calm down.
All right. A lot of people, including Nancy Pendergast, who did the research and wrote the first draft for these good news segments, have confessed that they only half listened to the complicated explanations of what Bitcoin is and how it works, because it doesn't seem like it would ever really connect to their lives. They use money as in legal currency, dollars in the United States, euros in Europe, etc. And all their friends use money. They're familiar with that. Who needs cryptocurrency? Well, Bitcoin is different. It's meant to be used as currency that doesn't have any connection to government. It's controlled by private software. I'm not sure how this is supposed to make it more liberating, but that's what they say they want to do. To make a Bitcoin, you have to use this software code called proof of work, which is very, very complex, detailed, and uses massive amounts of energy. Proof of work verifies a Bitcoin miner has solved intricate cryptographic puzzles which add to the Bitcoin account, or at least that's what it was in the early days. The more Bitcoin that's made, the more complicated these puzzles get. So it's not, you know, clever people solving math problems, at least not anymore. It's rich people buying supercomputers to solve the math problems for them, right? Very, very, very energy intensive supercomputers. Bitcoin has become if you burn more energy, you get more money. If you burn more energy, you get more money. That's what Bitcoin has become. burn energy, and get more money. The energy needed to power those crypto puzzles has caused dormant coal plants to be revived and gas plants that were becoming less competitive because of renewables to be revitalized. And guess what? Rededicated to Bitcoin. Listeners, you might be thinking, I thought that this was supposed to be a good news segment. Well, the good news is that there is an alternative to proof of work called proof of stake, which could reduce Bitcoin energy use by 99%. That's huge. At least some people are saying it could. And in this system, miners pledge their coins to verify transactions, and there are penalties for adding false or inaccurate information. Greenpeace and the Environmental Working Group, along with others, have launched a campaign called Change the Code, Not the Climate.
You are listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. And we've been talking about recent climate crisis news. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Now, they're using digital advertising on Facebook, on Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times combined with legal action against the proposed mining sites. They hope to influence Bitcoin investors to change the code and dramatically reduce the energy consumed by this market. Now, perhaps the world doesn't need Bitcoin, but if we must have it, let's have it in a less energy-intensive way.
Microplastics. Microplastics are tiny pieces of plastic, very tiny, tiny pieces of plastic that leach off of bigger pieces of plastic and take thousands of years to decompose. We all know plastic requires fossil fuels to make. So in a way, microplastics are a fossil fuel byproduct. And because these microplastics are so small, they go everywhere. They're in the water supply. They have been found on top of Mount Everest. They have been found in human blood. They are in most clothes. They come off in the washing machine to enter our water system, our bodies, yours and mine, and ultimately the bodies of all life on Earth. In response to this problem, companies around the globe are coming up with better washing machines and fabrics, or at least trying to. Grundig, a German company, released a fiber-catching washing machine last fall. It has a filter made of recycled plastic, which catches 90% of synthetic fibers released in the wash cycle. The filter lasts for 6 months, after which it can be returned free of charge. A British company called Matter has made a device called Gulp, which can be retrofitted to existing washing machines. You don't have to buy a new one. It connects between the outflow pipe and the drain and traps the fibers. There are also products that go into the washing machine with the clothes. Guppy Friend is a great name, by the way. Guppy Friend is a bag which collects 54% of the microfibers, and Cora Ball has spikes that snag the fibers. Some fibers shed off our clothes and while we are walking around. To try to address this, new resources are being used for textiles. Algiknit, A-L-G-I-K-N-I-T. It's probably algae knit. I'm going to go with algae knit. Algae knit makes biodegradable yarn from kelp. Orange Fiber, an Italian company, uses byproducts of juice production to make fabric. Pineyam uses the pineapple leaf to make yarn and fabric. All these things have way less microplastic. And a group in England is working on a way to alter the surface of the fabric with a laser that prevents shedding. This process does not require water or chemicals. Of course, we didn't have this problem back when we made our clothes entirely from plant products and animal wool. It sounds like having these washing machine additions are better than not having them, but changing the fabrics seems like the important part to emphasize. Changing the fabrics. Half the fibers are released while clothes are worn, and most of the human population does not own a washing machine. So even the innovations in good news cannot escape the fact that the entire world is paying the price for the lifestyle of a few countries. This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
For WBAI in New York, I'm Linda Perry, thanking new BAI buddies. Tracy Washington from Somerset, New Jersey. She's a new buddy and hopes WBAI continues and informs the people. Her favorite show is one we just relaunched, Black Agenda Radio with Margaret Kimberly. It's broadcast on Fridays at 5 p.m.
Welcome to Black Agenda Radio, where we provide news, commentary, and analysis from a Black left perspective.
Daniel from Lodi, New Jersey, thank you for becoming a new buddy. He says he likes all BAI shows. Nathaniel from Philly is a new buddy, and so is another buddy from the Village. Gregory from Massapequa says thank you to WBAI. His favorite show is What's Happening with Ralph Pointer and Betty Davis.
Get set. Ralph Pointer, What's Happening?
Good evening, my sisters and brothers and sisters. We do have an interesting program for you, as we promised.
David Somerville from Harlem is a large WBAI buddy contributor. His favorite show is Living for the City with Michael G. Haskins. He also likes many of our programs. He lists them, The Gary Null Show.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We began with the latest on health and healing. This comes from the National Institutes of Health, National Institute on Aging. Lower the risk of dementia in people who are...
Baby,
Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall.
Yes, here on WBAI 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. There is so much going on in the world, and it's great to know that WBAI is here for us.
David also likes Black Agenda Radio and Milton Alamadi and Colin Benjamin's Black Star News.
Greetings, greetings, sisters and brothers. Welcome to your favorite Pan-Africa news show.
From the streets with Bob Law.
Let's look a little closer at the music that in a real sense could be called the soundtrack for the 20th century. It's going to be an interesting conversation. So join me this sunny spring Saturday in the city. This is 99.5 WBAI. I'm Bob Law.
Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we look at the origins of the war in Ukraine and the role that the United States played in bringing that war about.
We speak Mind Flight with Imhotep Gary Bird.
Well, good evening. Pass the word. We are back with you flying high on a Sunday night. It's Imhotep Gary Bird's Radio GBE, Mind Flight, your gateway to the Black experience. As you know, Mind Flight is all about the local, national, international stops and the stops of mind, body, and spirit that take us soul traveling wherever the winds of change take
us. Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. Vantage Point with the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. Paul Fisher's What's the Frequency, Kenneth? Peter Beauchamp's All Mixed Up.
What a beautiful morning. Turn on the radio and let's have some music.
Democracy Now!, which is broadcast weekday mornings at 8 a.m. right after WBAI's new morning program, What's Going On?
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
BAI Buddy Favorites.
You've got to start off each day with a song. Now, even when things go wrong.
I'm David Rothenberg, and the program is any Saturday, an essay out on a limb. Ever since Trump's political ambition inflicted itself on us, I've been citing and reminding people of William Shire's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich.
Karen Taborn's favorite program is any Saturday. She says she listens to David Rothenberg's show, but also listens to Latin Roots and On the Count, WBAI's Prison and Criminal Justice Report.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.3 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation.
Jim from Binghamton is a $25 a month BAI buddy helping to keep WBAI radio alive. His favorite show is Labrish.
It is 3 o'clock in the morning at New York City, and this program is Labrish. My name is Haptah Selassie. We're saying this morning that in war, truth is the first casualty.
And Lupe Hernandez says, thank you for all that you do, WBAI, from downtown Manhattan. And Harvey Simon from Sunnyside, Queens, is a new BAI buddy. Thank you to all our new BAI May buddies. And join them. Please become a WBAI buddy. Let us know if we can use your name and what your favorite show is and any other comments that you have when you phone in and you say you want to become a WBAI buddy. Just call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, or go to WBAI.org and click that green square with the peace dove on it that says BAI Buddy. Thank you so much.